Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, December the 13th. As we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots of stories, inflation, Iran, Taiwan, Ukraine, a couple of juries making some tough decisions, just a lot of things going on. Peggy Noonan wrote a very interesting article about Vice President Harris, and I think she's onto something in that article. And vaccine mandates are not becoming very popular across the country, not just with judges, but also with schools. Lots of things to get into with our friend Bill. Let me tell my friend Bill that it's a little chilly here in Dallas. How about New York, Bill?
Well, are we talking about the political weather or the real weather?
The real weather for now. The political weather we'll get into.
The real weather, well, the Al Gore Weather Service says it's going to 101 degrees today, and to be very careful because the grass may catch fire, and that will be the end. And Little Evita from the Bronx is also warning that if we don't end global warming within a week, it's over, and the world will simply end. And we'll have to send astronauts out just to save civilization and have them land on Mars. Actually, looking outside, looks like good weather. I'm most excited about the political weather because Bill de Blasio will not be mayor of New York after the next 2.5 weeks. And that has got to be good news for any rational person.
Absolutely. He had an interview yesterday with Chris Wallace. We're going to talk about Chris Wallace as well in a minute. But his interview yesterday, the explanations that he gave, I mean, they sounded pretty crazy to me, and I don't live there. So I'm sure they must have been pretty crazy. But you mentioned Al Gore, and I just wanted to briefly say this, Bill, that it was 21 years ago today that the Supreme Court finally ended the Florida recount, and thus Governor George W. Bush became President-elect Bush. 21 years, that seems like a very long time, but it's been pretty profitable for Al Gore, I would think, these 21 years, Bill.
It has. Apparently he lives very well. Apparently he flies very well. Everybody knows his private jet is actually powered by rubber bands, so there's no impact on the environment at all. The Gore rubber band plane is very well known. He is still, selling the old line, the inconvenient truth, bad things are happening. It's interesting, though, that he no longer is really a major spokesman for that cause.
Right.
That other people have taken over, and the Democratic Party has found global warming to be a very lucrative area. There's a lot of money changing hands, a lot of federal grants being granted, and I would imagine that some of that money goes to groups that are pushing the agenda but don't really make any progress but have the right loyalties. So Gore, well, there's no sign of him coming back into active politics.
Right.
He is just there, and he is a memory. In these 21 years, I point out that the world did not come to an end, despite all his predictions. But maybe
that's
in
right.
the next 21 years, give the man a chance. That's what I say.
Yeah, you got to
give the man.
Let
a
him. Yeah, you got to let his predictions come true eventually. You know,
it's
like
yes.
my mother used to say that they always predicted every year that Mao Zedong was going to die, and one of these years they were going to get it right.
Yes, that's right. And then they would say, as predicted here, as predicted here.
Right, yeah, that's right. Well, it's interesting because the two central figures of that day, of course, Al Gore and George W. Bush, I mean, nobody talks much about them anymore, which is, I guess, normal. And George W. Bush is here in the Dallas area. He's enjoying being a grandfather, and he seems to be very happy with his life. We don't hear much about – it's almost like these two figures who were central to our debate 21 years ago have sort of gone into the files. And maybe that's natural, Bill. Maybe that's the way it always happens. I don't know.
It's natural in this country. We don't do dynasties here. We really don't. And, it's been pointed out many times that there's not a single signer of the Declaration of Independence whose family is prominent in America today. And even a family as powerful as the Roosevelt family once was, I mean, producing two presidents within a generation of each other, I think the Roosevelts, the Franklin Roosevelts had, I believe, five children. Most, I think they're probably all gone by now, but not one rose above the level of congressman. We really reject the idea of dynasty. Now, there are people who talk about a Bush dynasty, but not so much anymore. There will be some of the younger Bushes who will go into politics, but I don't think that there is any mad demand that they do. And the same thing, of course, is true of the Kennedys. They have a few people left in politics, but I don't think there's a Kennedy vote anymore. It's really a reflection of the nature of our country and the fact that new people come along and try to seize the initiative.
Right, and I think it was no one better than First Lady Barbara Bush who said in 2016 when she was trying to understand why Jeb Bush wasn't, setting the world on fire, I think she said something like, too many Bushes or something like that, she said. And I think that was about right. There is a Bush here in Texas who's running for Attorney General, George P. Bush, who is the son of Jeb, nephew of President W. Bush. He does. I do believe he has a future. Maybe not in 2022, but I think he's got the name and the respect that we could hear more from him, at least here in Texas politics. But Bill, I want to talk also another big story yesterday was that Chris Wallace decided to leave Fox News. He did it in a very gracious way, by the way. It was nothing, no bitterness or anything like that. And now he said it. And I've been following the news and all these conspiracy theories as to why he's leaving. But I kind of came up with my own based on what Chris Wallace said. Chris Wallace said he wanted to try something new. And I'm wondering how many people in the news media, the people like Chris Wallace who cover the news every day and see how bitter the politics has become and how ugly it has become and how social media, Twitter, has just poisoned everything. I wonder how many people are just ready to say, you know what, this is crazy. This is not even journalism anymore. I want to do something different. I think that could happen. That could happen to a lot of people, Bill. So that's my theory, whether it's a good theory or not, but that's what I was thinking, that the politics is so ugly these days that maybe some people just need some time off from it, Bill.
That may be true. I mean, I think that there are many people who will suddenly leave a field or stay within a field but go to another job because of dissatisfaction over the political currents in the country, feeling they're just covering arguments. On the other hand, he may have been uncomfortable at Fox. I think he's much more liberal than the Fox network is. But he did praise Fox for giving him independence over the years. Then he talked about joining the great team at CNN. I thought that was a little off-putting, given the fact that CNN seems to be in more trouble than it ever has been because its team isn't so great. But he's going to be in the streaming part of CNN, which I'm not familiar with. I don't use it. And he will, and I'm sure he's being paid a lot of money just to come to CNN. And let's see what happens. He's actually not a particularly influential journalist. He was the kind of the resident liberal at Fox News. He conducted a perfectly good program, but I don't think he is considered really an elder statesman of journalism. So we'll see. Maybe there's a new turn, maybe not. It's interesting also, by the way, that NBC, who was Williams?
Brian Williams.
He also left his program, and he left his program, and he's going to be doing something else. And again, I don't think it's a loss of a revered name in journalism. He always had that asterisk after his name because he was suspended for dishonesty at one point and then made a little bit of a comeback at MSNBC. But there are very few journalists today whose move would really constitute a truly large story. It's an interesting story. It's an interesting human event story. But I don't see where these resignations mean all that much. CNN seems to be absolutely determined to go along with exactly what it's been doing in the past, which is committing suicide slowly, but they're committing suicide. Fox is in very good shape, apparently, seems to be in very good shape. MSNBC is getting more extreme by the day. I don't know where their ratings are right now. The ratings of cable television operations tend to be very small to begin with. Fox dominates cable news. The others have very small audiences, especially when you realize it's a nation of 330 million people. And I do think that we hear so much about them because they emphasize Washington. And in Washington, anybody will be happy to go on a television program, even if it has 10 viewers, just to get the practice.
Well, that's right. Somebody said that 7 million people watch – well, not someone said. Somebody pointed out that 7 million people watch cable news every night. 4 watch Fox, watch MSNBC, and 1 million is divided between CNN and Newsmax and some of these others. But you're right. It is a small number given the amount of influence that they think they have. I think a lot of people who are not interested in national politics are not watching. I don't tend to follow the cable news like I used to. In fact, this year, I don't think that I followed any. I just didn't watch the nighttime programming of the cable news because I thought, Bill, it got so predictable.
Exactly. Yeah, I think predictable is exactly the right word.
I mean, You knew what you were going to get at CNN. You knew the absolute insanity you were going to hear at MSNBC. And with Fox, to their credit, they do have debates, which is kind of nice. But sometimes, you know, the debates during the day are actually pretty good. But at nights, they sometimes get predictable, too. But I just think that there are better ways of getting information. And I tend to be getting a lot more and more of my information from just general sources on the internet and podcasts.
I think that's
even
true.
Even the radio, Bill. The radio has, at least here in the morning, we get a really nice newscast on a local radio channel that I enjoy listening to. It's pretty straightforward. There's nothing real partisan about it, but I enjoy that too, Bill.
Yes, radio has a lot of good things. Of course, most people listen in their cars. Radio has become a car medium, and I have one of the services that comes in by satellite and has no commercials, and I enjoy listening to it. I think there's probably too much journalism around today, people writing about nothing and writing nothing about nothing. People should probably spend more time reading books and doing other things, It'll change in the next 6 months because of the 2022 election. And I think we're going to see a year of tremendous political bitterness, political tricks. And I think that what will be tested this year is whether the Democratic Party has any holding power. I don't really think it does, but you never know. And I think also what will be tested this year, very much so, will be the integrity of our elections, because I have no doubt that there are people throughout the political spectrum who have no problem at all with stealing votes. And I think it's an important subject for the news media to cover. They don't cover it, really. All they do is ridicule Donald Trump. But I think that's a factor that's going to be looked at this year as well. I'm hoping that a year from today, if we are all together and functioning, that a year from today, we'll be looking at a very solidly Republican House and maybe even a Republican Senate. And I'm hoping for a landslide. Those predictions are in the future, and we'll see. Anything can happen. Anything. You know, we don't know. A year from today, Kamala Harris can be president. A year from today, we could be at war in one of the many crises that the president is mishandling. A year from today, we could be in an economic boom or an economic depression. So, you know, predictions right now are really more for fun than anything else.
That's right. That's right. Predictions sometimes scare you when they tell you that the GOP is up 10 on the so-called generic, and I say, hey, just play like you're down six runs, because
that's right.
That makes me feel better. But you talk about politics and how political it's going to get. We're seeing a little bit of that here in Texas with these maps, you know, that the DOJ, Department of Justice, is going after our maps. I don't think it's going to work, but they're going to go after our maps. But somebody was saying, gee, why aren't they going after Maryland or Illinois and California? I mean, if their business is to stop majorities from gerrymandering districts, if that's their objective, I mean, Texas is not the only one doing it. I mean, a lot of other people are doing it, but yet they focus on Texas, you know?
Well, they don't like Texas because it's very Republican, and it has values they don't like. And because we have an attorney general who's a tremendous disappointment, I thought he, of all the appointees, would try to rise above politics. But I was much too optimistic, and he's turned out to be really basically just a hack.
Yes, and aren't you happy that he didn't make it to the Supreme Court?
I am.
Aren't you
happy
about that? I don't know what Mitch McConnell knew, or whether he was just playing politics, I don't know. But, man, I am so happy that he's not in the Supreme Court, and that Gorsuch or Kavanaugh is taking that. Well, I guess Gorsuch would have been the one that took that seat, yeah. And I'm just so happy that that's the way it turned out. But I don't think that the DOJ is going to succeed against Texas, because this Supreme Court is showing a lot of respect to the states, and they did so with the abortion law here in Texas. So I think the Supreme Court is going to say, hey, guys, figure that out in Texas. And unless there's a blatant violation of human rights, which there isn't in Texas, then just figure it out yourself, Bill. That's my impression, that all of this Voting Rights Act, that this is a violation of the Voting Rights Act. Well, I don't buy that. I don't think nobody here takes it seriously. That's what I can tell you, Bill.
Well, they are using the Justice Department basically as a political arm of the Biden administration, and I think we can expect that to escalate. I wouldn't be surprised if the Justice Department invents a major case in 2022 to try to disrupt the election. That seems to be the business they're in nowadays.
Right. Yeah, it's a shame, because I think you're right. I think many of us, I agree with you, I think many of us expected Garland or Attorney General Garland to be a little bit more reasonable, more centrist. And he's turning out to be just another disaster in this cabinet. I mean, this is a cabinet made up of people who aren't really that capable. And it scares the heck out of me, because we're the United States is still a country that needs a strong cabinet, a strong president.
Well,
it
needs a strong something, because it needs a strong because we have a very weak president, and a president who seems to be getting weaker by the day, and we have a vice president who is, you know, who may be qualified to go on to the presidency of a student government somewhere, but not a real government. And third in line for the presidency is Nancy Pelosi, who got her first start in politics from Thomas Jefferson. So it's a very, very difficult situation. We, I think, appear to the world right now as a weak and indecisive country, and that's dangerous. That's always dangerous in international affairs. If you appear weak, the chances of war grow greater. And I think that we have to look at four areas: Iran, North Korea, China, and Russia. And any one of them could explode at any time. And if you look at the fact that there are four of them, the law of averages is not with us.
That's right. And, in fact, I want to talk about those four that you mentioned, very serious problems. But you mentioned the vice president. Peggy Noonan wrote an article about her, and it's got everybody in the left just going nuts. But all that Peggy Noonan said, and I thought it was a good article, in the Wall Street Journal, where she writes a column, I guess, from time to time. All she said was that the vice president needs to take her job more seriously. And, Bill, I agree with that. I mean, she was given, in my opinion, the opportunity of the century to tackle the problem on the border. It was a great opportunity for her to show her skills as an executive, as a diplomat, as a uniter, as someone who can actually get things done. She didn't take it seriously. And now you have the president of Guatemala in an interview last week saying, we haven't talked to anybody in the White House. I mean, so, it just doesn't make the vice president look like a serious person. And I'm not even talking about the way she's laughing when she's doing interviews or how unprepared she seems when she's talking. I mean, she was given a great opportunity at the border, and she didn't take it, Bill. And I think, in my mind, that doesn't make her like a serious person, Bill.
No, and she doesn't come off as a serious person. She comes off as somebody who was selected because she punched two boxes. She is a female, and she is a female of color. And that's not the way the presidency is supposed to work, and the vice presidency is incorporated within the presidential office. She should be far more active. She should be making thoughtful speeches around the country. She should be able to demonstrate things she's actually done. And you get the feeling that she is either indifferent or she's bored or she doesn't want to stick her neck out even for her own president. But whatever it is, if Joe Biden should depart the earth tomorrow, she would be president, and I don't think she would be welcomed into office with any great enthusiasm.
No, I mean, the public just doesn't seem to like her. I mean, doesn't seem to think that she's very capable. Dick Morris wrote something, I think I sent it to you, where he was saying that we've had like about 30 or 40 years of very strong vice presidents, you know, starting out with Mondale for Carter. Mondale was a good vice president. Then, of course, yes. Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Gore. Gore, you know, was someone who was handed and took on a lot of responsibility. Cheney, probably the strongest vice president that we've had in memory, or at least recent memory. And then you have Obama and Biden. I mean, Biden didn't do much, but, you know, he wasn't crazy. I mean, I think had something happened to Obama, I think most of us would have been okay with Biden being president. I mean, he didn't scare anybody, yes. I guess what I'm trying to say. And then Trump with Pence, who I thought Pence was fabulous. And in many ways,
he was wonderful.
He was a wonderful vice president, certainly someone that had my confidence and lots of other people. And I think in many ways had Trump given him more responsibility with the virus stuff, probably would have come off better. But my point is that here we have all these, we have a sequence of very strong vice presidents, men who were able and capable in the minds of people of taking over. And now you get this one, and a lot of people are scared, and I can understand why, Bill.
I think I can understand it. Also, the fear of Kamala Harris is not only that she has poor judgment, does not come off as bright and informed, and does not appear to be terribly interested, you know, minor things like that. But I think there is another fear, and that is that she can be bought, that she will be under the influence of different lobbies, of different groups, including ethnic groups within the Democratic Party, and that will be her administration. She failed at a race for the presidency and failed so badly that she withdrew from the race before the first votes were cast because her polling was so low, even after months of campaigning. She would come into office with very few credits, very few, maybe a little bit of goodwill, and she would certainly be protected by the press. That's the one thing she has going for her. They will make her into Queen Victoria. You know, I mean, they really will. They will portray her as a history-making figure, a precedent-breaking figure, and most important of all, a woman married to a Hollywood lawyer. I mean, you know, they will point out that not only will she be president, she'll be able to play for the president on television and be picked up for at least one season. So I think, you know, let the jokes begin. But no, I think we are in a bad position in terms of leadership, and that we really should consider some kind of change. It can only be, you know, can only consider it. You don't have to do it, but some kind of change to bring us more in line with countries that have the ability to change a chief executive quickly and decisively. Now, that always carries with it risks. It could fall prey to partisan politics. The president in this country is elected by the people, the vice president is, and to remove a president takes an impeachment and a conviction. But at the same time, you have a situation now where you just feel there's a big bubble at the top, and the people are not able to do anything about it.
That's right. No, I think there's a great sense of fear that we're being led by a man right now who, as they used to say, the elevator doesn't go to the top floor. And
that's
it's
right.
Just, you know, there's just a sense that he's not ready. And I feel bad for him, actually, when I see him. Like the other day he was talking and he's making up all these stories. I mean, he'll make up a story. And I'm sitting there saying, you know, if you're running for city council, you can get away with that. But when you're ready, when you are the president of the United States, that kind of stuff doesn't go well. Bill, let me take a little break, and then when we come back, I want to talk more about foreign policy. I want to do a good segment on that. A lot of big problems out there. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, it seems to me that right now that President Biden has two big, big problems on the table. One is inflation, and the other one is a triple headache that you mentioned before, Iran, Taiwan, and Ukraine. Iran, of course, nuclear capability, Ukraine and Taiwan, victims of a invasion. And I think most Americans understand why we should maybe defend Israel, but nobody has a clue as to why we should send our son to defend Ukraine and Taiwan. It doesn't mean you support what the Chinese may allegedly do or the Russians, but you got to be able to explain to the American parents why this is important. And
yes,
nothing like that has happened. I saw the Secretary of State on one of the TV shows, Bill, saying, well, what did you tell Biden? What did you tell Putin? Well, we told him he's going to pay a very heavy price. Okay, that sounds good. But what exactly, I mean, what is Putin hearing when he hears that, Bill?
Well, you know, I don't know what he's hearing, because I suspect that Putin is right now depending very heavily on, one, his instincts, which are good politically. I mean, not good for us, but they're in an abstract sense. And I think he's depending on his intelligence people. You know, he's an old KGB guy. And I think he must be getting some very interesting intelligence on the United States, and possibly intelligence that may lead him into temptation, because the United States appears, and would have to appear to any intelligence official today, to be somewhat weak, somewhat indecisive, and rather vulnerable, and with a population that really has no interest in foreign policy. I mean, while Americans follow it, you're quite right. They have to be told why things are important, why the administration is doing this rather than that. They're not being told anything. And in fact, you get the feeling that there is absolutely no sense of urgency in the Biden administration about foreign policy. And I would imagine that Putin is taking this into consideration and will probably have us for lunch as a result of what he knows and as a result of his instincts.
Were you surprised, Bill, after that conversation that President Biden had with, I guess, President Putin, the conversation that they had, that President Biden did not do a press conference to answer questions directly? He has his Secretary of State go on TV, whatever, talking about it. Were you expecting the president to speak to the country, or is it normal that the Secretary of State speaks for him, though, or the press secretary, which is even a joke. That's becoming a real joke, those press secretary meetings.
Yes. Well, I don't think there's any absolute precedent for things like this. But I think that the buildup to the meeting was so enormous that the president was going to speak directly to Vladimir Putin that I think he did owe the American people a press conference. But as you know, his press conferences are farcical because he will make a statement, which is sometimes incoherent, and then he will, quote, take questions from three people and leave. And
right.
It is not the typical press conference, which is kind of rough and tumble, and which has a long history. It's his press conference. I think that the opportunity to engage the American people and to ask for their support was there, and the opportunity, unfortunately, was not taken very seriously.
No, I mean, I was kind of surprised. I mean, so much intensity on this conversation they were going to have, and then, you know, it just fades away, and you've got his cabinet members speaking for him, or even worse than that, the press secretary. Look, I understand it's a very difficult job being a press secretary. I get that. But that's not, if I was the president, that's not who I want explaining how the conversation went with Putin. I would want to be myself answering questions directly. And at the very least, Bill, when you answer questions directly, you project a certain confidence so that people kind of know, well, this guy's up to the job. That's, we're not seeing that, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely correct. There is a vacuum. There's an information vacuum. The press secretary has the apparently almost all the burden in this administration of speaking for the president, and nobody takes her seriously because she's, what she's basically giving us is the party line. However, she also knows that she is dealing with a very compliant press corps, and this is where real journalism has to come in at some point. And they are giving her a pass because they're giving Biden a pass. But the situation is very weak. I mean, the presidential news conference has become an American tradition. When I say a news conference, I mean a public news conference where the president is quoted directly and is out there. Certainly Kennedy had them. Eisenhower had them. Eisenhower knew exactly how to handle the press. He started rambling. And they thought he was rambling, and he was actually just avoiding the question. But the press, it wasn't as swift as it should have been, and he kind of owned them at many points. But it has become a tradition. It's a tradition that obviously is not being followed by this administration. And I think that many Americans really believe there's nobody at the top, nobody that is that we are sure of.
Yeah. Well, it's such a contrast with President Trump, and that's the part that I think a lot of people are starting to see. Look, I thought at times President Trump got into needless fights with members of the press when he was calling somebody a fourth-rate journalist. I thought that was stupid. There's no reason to say that. I thought he got into way too many fights. I also think sometimes he answered too many questions, like when he was outside the helicopter, he was – everybody, I mean, was asking him a question, sometimes even the same question. But at least he was answering questions. And you can like or dislike his style, but at least he was answering questions. Now we have a case of a man who is, I think, being kept away from the press, Bill, on purpose. I have no doubt about that. And I don't like it as a citizen that my president is, you know, not able to answer simple questions. We're not talking got you questions. We're talking about just, well, what did you tell Putin? Not Putin. Well, what is your strategy? Nothing like that, Bill.
No, he can't, because obviously in some way, I'm not a physician, I can't judge these things, but in some way he's obviously impaired. Well, even if it's just old age. And he starts going off on his own and he starts to ramble. He gets incoherent. The staff begins to panic. And I don't think the situation is going to improve. I mean, I think we can legitimately ask the question, will he be around for the next 2 years? That doesn't mean he would die. I mean, we hope he doesn't, obviously. We hope he's in good health. But he could resign. He could reach the point where, you know, the committee comes to him and says, Mr. President, it's time to go. And he would kind of have to resign. I think that's very much in the cards. Then he secures Kamala Harris as vice president, and she would be running then in 2024 as an incumbent, which is a nice place from which to run the vice presidency. Of course, you'd have to do something in office. That could be the crisis.
Well, that's right. But it's interesting because over the weekend, somebody was asking the First Lady about President's health, you know, asking her. And I thought that was very – I don't remember that ever happening before, where the First Lady is getting questions about, you know, her husband's health or mental health. I thought that was and I'm not talking about some crazy journalist. I think it was just one of these interviews that she's doing where somebody asked her about it. And I thought that was really strange, Bill.
It was strange. And Jill Biden, in a way, is strange. I don't know exactly what she does. She seems to be a nice enough person. She's highly educated, cares about children. But she is being asked about the president in ways, as you say, that were never done before. When presidents were ill or presidents were distant from the press for a time, the press would ask either the news secretary or other members of the administration. The First Lady has traditionally been left out of politics. Now, some dabbled. I mean, Nancy Reagan certainly did. Hillary Clinton probably did a lot more than dabble when her husband was president. But you're right. The involvement of the First Lady is beginning to echo a little bit of what happened during the administration of a man who from whom Americans expected much, and that was President Wilson. And he had a stroke during his second term, and his wife Edith basically took over the government. And maybe there are people in the press today who believe that Mrs. Biden, or Dr. Biden, as she prefers to be called, actually has power in the administration. That is possible. They could believe it.
Yeah. Well, I think she does have a lot of influence, and I think she is the one person who could end it, meaning the one person who could go to her husband and say, it's time to go. But, Bill, maybe I'm being a little too cynical, but I think the plan all along was exactly that. You know, we use Joe Biden to get elected. He's the only one who could defeat Trump. We use him to get elected. We surround him with a bunch of people from the Obama administration. Then a couple of years later, he says, you know, I got to go. I can't really keep up with this anymore. And now you've got Kamala Harris in the presidency that she could never win by herself. I think that was the plan. Maybe I'm being too cynical, but I think that was the plan. But the plan ran into a few problems that I'll be bringing up in a minute. But that was the plan, Bill. I hate to be cynical, but I think that was the plan, to make Kamala Harris the president this way, Bill.
Well, yeah. First of all, you can't be too cynical about Washington politics. It's impossible. I mean, it's just the nature of it. I think you're quite right. I do believe, and this is based simply on observation, not on real proof, but I do believe that it's the Obama crowd that is running the White House. People forget that Susan Rice is still in the White House. She's in as a domestic affairs advisor, which is ridiculous because her area has been foreign policy. But she is still there. The Iran negotiating team is essentially the same one that Obama had when he was president. And I think if they do not answer to him personally, they answer to Obama's policies, which seem to be repeating themselves, especially in the Middle East. So, no, I don't think you're being cynical at all.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I'm wrong in what I'm saying. Hopefully the president will serve his whole time and the nation will be spared a Kamala Harris presidency. But, you know, you cannot discount that possibility given the president's age. Not so much his age, because Trump is a man in his 70s too. But his appearance is really what worries a lot of people.
Yes.
But I think the plan, the Biden presidency has run into a major problem, and that's gasoline prices and inflation. And he just doesn't seem to know how to explain it, how to get out of it. They don't have any policy. Now you have this Build Better, Back Better, or whatever it's called. That has apparently fallen flat because the Senator Manchin doesn't seem to want to go along with it because he's concerned about inflation. It's like the presidency has hit a wall, Bill, and the economy is the big reason. I have no idea how he gets out of it, Bill, because they don't have any solutions, and they don't seem to be able to come up with any solutions at all, Bill.
Hello? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Oh, we just lost the sound for a second.
Yeah.
I think you have a situation.
Did you hear the question? Did you hear the question?
Yes, yeah, I did hear the question.
Yeah, that he's hit the wall, and I don't know how he gets out of it.
Yes. There don't seem to be any easy routes out of it because he has no allies who can get him out of it. He has control of the House of Representatives, and they are for him, but only if he goes far enough left. The House is really controlled by the left wing of the Democratic Party, not the extreme left wing, but the left wing. In the Senate, he has essentially a deadlock. Kamala Harris has had to break that deadlock several times. He does not have large political allies around the United States, and he has no argument going for him. That is probably the most important point. There is no mission that he's on that the American people are enthusiastic about. He has these big programs, financial programs, and they don't test very well in the polls. He doesn't test very well in the polls. There's a loss of confidence, which is very critical in politics. You know, in Europe, when they replace a prime minister, they have what is known as a vote of confidence, which precedes the political execution. And I think the word is very important there. If the country doesn't have confidence in a leader, nothing else really is going to matter. That confidence has to be restored. I don't see any way it can be restored, because while people may wish Biden well, his policies are not particularly popular. They're not getting more popular, and he seems to be getting weaker. So he may be in a zero-gain position.
Yeah. Well, it just seems like, going back to my idea of this plan that they had to eventually put, Kamala Harris as president, it was all based on the idea that he was a popular fellow. I mean, nobody really hates Joe Biden. I know some people maybe do, but I never did. I mean, I think he was a typical Washington man who's been there for 50 years, never really did anything, but he's a likable person. He's not the kind of person you hate. I mean, he certainly doesn't create the reaction that a Donald Trump created. I mean, you either loved Trump or you hated Trump. I mean, there's no in between. But I think that sort of gets to the problem that nobody – he was not really elected. What you had in 2020 was an election between Trump and Trump. So if you hated Trump, you voted against him by voting for Biden. But there's no emotional connection between Biden and the people who voted for him. And that's why I think his problem is he doesn't have anybody he can call on the phone and say, I was watching this documentary of LBJ, picking up the phone and calling this congressman, down in the South and saying, look, I really need your vote on the Civil Rights Act. And if you give it to me, I promise that I will campaign for you. And you're going to win that district.
Yes.
I mean, do you think Joe Biden could make that phone call, Bill? I don't think so.
No, I don't think he could even physically go in and campaign for people. I mean, maybe he can make one speech from a teleprompter, but there's nothing that he can give them. I think there's this general feeling that he was not going to be president that long, and a general feeling that the person right behind him will not be a strong president if he gets into office. There is in the Democratic Party a vacuum. That does not mean to suggest that the Republican Party is free of problems. It is not. They really are going at each other. And if you'll notice, there are a lot of conflicts within the Republican Party that can destroy the greatest chance a political party has ever had, aside from the fact that they have Donald Trump hovering over everything. And I'm not at all convinced that he ought to run again, because I think that he may run into headwinds he doesn't expect. But the Republican Party as a party is not in that great a shape. It does not have a recognizable leader except for Trump, who is extremely divisive, as you point out. And they have to get their act in order, too. It isn't just the Democrats.
That's right. Well, that's true. I think you're right about the problems on the GOP side. But I guess if I was looking at a balance sheet, I'd rather have the Republican problems right now than the Democrats problems, because the Republican problems are more problems you can fix. But I think inflation is the key, and they don't seem to have any explanation for it. Not that anybody would. I mean, inflation is a very difficult thing to explain, as Jimmy Carter found out, and even Ronald Reagan had to deal with a lot of inflation. But I go back to 1981, 1982, when inflation was high. I felt that President Reagan put the country on the right track to fix the inflation problem. And that's where people don't believe that of Joe Biden. That's his biggest challenge, that nobody really believes that what he's doing is going to fix the problem in their lives every day, which is pumping the gas, buying tomato. And that's the problem, Bill, that nobody has confidence that they have a plan. You know, that's what I think the issue is, Bill.
I think that's absolutely correct. And I also think that the American people have lost confidence in the press. That is something that is extraordinary, but every poll shows it. And if the people don't believe the information they're getting, they're going to be very reluctant to make any kind of strong commitment. And I don't think they believe the information they're getting, at least not from the mainstream media. I think many people have sources on the Internet that they like and they've come to trust. But I've never seen a situation like this before where the mainstream media is as distrusted as it is today.
That's right. No, at least 50% or more believe that the media has an agenda, which is not a – I mean, it seems to me their only agenda should be reporting the news. When they go beyond that, then they get into trouble. Let me run through a few other topics here, Bill, that have been in the news recently. The issue of vaccine mandates, it seems like more and more they're not just going down in the courts, but now there's a story that I believe in Pennsylvania, the state Supreme Court in Pennsylvania is killing the mandates. It seems like more and more the country is moving in that direction where they're saying, you know, we understand there's a virus out there and we get it, but we can take care of ourselves. We can protect ourselves. We don't need this, you know, constant supervision, Bill. And I wish Dr. Fauci would hear the public, because that's what the public is telling him, Bill.
Well, you know, I think the entire information stream about the vaccines and about the virus is so corrupted by now that people are not absolutely sure of anything they're hearing. And I would imagine, I'm just guessing at this, that the phone lines to doctors' offices are probably being jammed, and that people are calling their doctor for personal advice and not depending on the federal government. I think they have botched so many opportunities to clarify things. And Fauci is not a good man to speak to the American people because he is not that careful about what he says and does not seem to understand the kind of information people need to make decisions. So we have a real mess there, and that mess can go any one of a number of ways. I think there is a fear in the country that this concern over the pandemic can go on for a number of years. And I really do think it's casting a pall over the country. And Fauci is not helping.
No. No, he's not. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had a new virus that was supposed to be terrible. And when I heard about it, I said, okay, well, let's I always take him seriously, Bill, because I know personally from people I know that the virus can be pretty bad, even fatal. But I also think that your chances are still pretty good to recover. And I do think all this constant hype, you know, of how bad it is actually making it very difficult for people to understand the virus. And, you know, I think a lot of people are taking the attitude that I'm taking, is which is say, okay, I know it's a serious problem. I can deal with it. Just, you know, don't shut me down completely, because I need to work as well, Bill.
That's right. And I think that Americans believe that the decisions to be made should be made jointly with them as a population, the government, the medical profession, and not dictated to. I think that some of the big failures that have occurred during this period, especially the destruction of the governor of New York, who a year ago was called America's governor and is now out of office under very, very bad circumstances, I think that, too, destroys people's confidence. They wonder who is really behind a lot of these pieces of advice and who's making the money. And
I think,
you know, people learn that behind every action there's usually some money. And you put all the factors together that you've talked about and you have a bad situation.
You really do. One quick point I wanted to get your reaction to, Bill. The Supreme Court decided not to touch the Texas abortion law. They left it in place. For those who are not familiar with the law, it simply says that no abortion if you can hear a heartbeat. of a baby, which is, I guess they tell me, 6 weeks to 10 weeks, whatever. And I, you know, that, I thought the Supreme Court might stop the Texas law and say that it went too far, but they left it in place, and that to me is a suggestion that there is something big coming with the Mississippi, I guess, decision that is supposed to come out next spring. And my prediction is that the court will say, let the states figure this out, and we're out of the abortion business, Bill.
I think you may have a good point there. I also think they will probably, in the end, allow Roe v. Wade to stand. I don't think they're going to, you know, directly overturn it. I think they understand that the trauma in a good part of the country would be very great, and the court is reluctant to withdraw rights that have already been given, even though many people may disagree morally with those rights in the first place. I think you may have hit on a very good point, that the court will throw up its hands and say, look, this is something for the states to decide, and I think that might be a very popular position in the country.
Yeah, and I think every state can then decide. I mean, and you know, maybe a state will say no abortion in our state, and then you'll have California, where apparently they're going to create an industry out of it. You know, you can actually
That's right.
I mean, which is really amazing. But anyway, we'll see what happens. I'm beginning to think, you know, when this whole thing started, I didn't know where the court was going to go. And just because they have six conservatives, that doesn't mean they're going to do what we think they're going to do. But now I'm beginning to think that that's where we're going. That they, you know, my preference would be tell the states you can regulate abortion, and just leave it at that. Let every state figure it out, Bill.
I think that's true, and they may be able to introduce some flexibility in what the states are allowed to do because of the presence of Roe. And I think you're right that they want to get out of the abortion business. Even Ruth Ginsburg once said she wished Roe had been done by the states and not by the Supreme Court. That is not an issue you decide in a court. That's an issue decided by the people. It represents an enormous moral change in American life and an enormous change in the way the baby is seen. I don't think that was a proper thing for a court to get involved in.
That's right. Well, I think there are many people in the court like Kavanaugh, for example, or Alito, who saw firsthand how ugly this abortion politics. I mean, look what they tried to do to Kavanaugh. And I think that, you know, not so much in revenge, but I think Kavanaugh could say, look, let's stop this because this is crazy. Every time a judge is nominated, all we do is argue about Roe v. Wade. Bill, I have one last thing I wanted to bring up. I always like to celebrate a birthday, and I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Dick Van Dyke is 96 years old today. Yeah. And that's, I like Dick Van Dyke. I thought he was a great, I thought that show that he and Mary Tyler Moore was a classic. And so, I mean, when you're 96, we say happy birthday in our podcast, Bill.
Well, we should. And he always was one of these entertainers who was eternally young. You know, you can't imagine Dick Van Dyke being an old man. He always had this very youthful spring to him in the way he performed, the way he acted. Happy birthday, and we miss Mary Tyler Moore, who, of course, is no longer with us. And it is amazing. It seems like only yesterday that they were on the air. But when I think of the Tonight Show, where I was ensconced for a while, I realized that there is only one principal from the Tonight Show of my era who is left, and that's Doc Severinsen. All the others are gone. And the time is absolutely unyielding.
Well, one question I've always had, ever since I came to the United States and I became a fan of that show, the Dick Van Dyke Show, it was on, I guess, in the middle 60s, or maybe I picked that up in reruns, I don't remember. But whenever I would look at Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore on the show, I always had the impression that they were casted to look like John Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy, because they seemed to have that look, especially Mary Tyler Moore with her hair. Am I wrong on that? Or is it just a coincidence that they looked like? Because even Dick Van Dyke's hair was the same way as President Kennedy's hair. Am I crazy in thinking that?
No, I don't think you're crazy in thinking it. Those were the styles of the time. You know, Mary Tyler Moore and her hat. I think that's what you're seeing. I don't think there was any conscious decision to make them into the Kennedys because they, as actors and as people who held a role, they had to stick pretty much to the role. And I don't think it was a Kennedy thing. I think it was simply the culture of the era.
Yeah, the look of the times, I guess, that ladies would dress that way and men would always have a suit on. But I always thought he had two amazing co-characters there. The Maury Amsterdam was one of them, right? And
Maury
the
Amsterdam
other lady.
One, yes.
Yeah, and the lady who was hilarious, Anne Marie, wasn't her name?
What was her name now? I've forgotten. Well, Valerie.
But they
Hoffman
were a great quartet. I mean, they just the show was great. I mean, they just seemed the characters were perfect for that show, Bill.
Oh yes, and perfect for the time. Mary Tyler Moore did try to make a comeback later on. It did not succeed. You know, it's one of these things where once the era is over, it's over. But it was a great show, very well written. Very presentable to the American people, and they never told you what their politics were.
That's right. You're exactly right. There was no virtue signaling on that show.
No, certainly not. Certainly not.
No.
That was a classic television show.
It was. It was a hilarious show, and I found it amusing that my nieces, who were born in the mid-80s to mid-90s, would all watch that show on Nickelodeon and laugh about it.
Oh, yes,
sure. I thought, gee, what amazing thing. 25 years after the show was made, you had new fans. I think that's a testament to how good it was, Bill.
And that happens often in show business. It really does. You had a lot of new fans of old MGM musicals in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And they would go back and they'd look at them on television and they liked them. Because they were timeless movies.
Well, Bill, one last thought here. Hopefully you'll do a review over the next couple of months of the new version of West Side Story. I haven't seen it, but apparently there's a new make of West Side Story. And I thought that's very dangerous.
Steven Spielberg.
Because that's a classic, and you don't want to mess with it.
It is a classic. Well, the first reports are very good on the movie. It's Steven Spielberg. I saw the original on Broadway with the original cast. So I am in some position to make a contrast. It's one of the great works of the American musical theater. And we should point out that Stephen Sondheim, who wrote the lyrics to West Side Story, died just last week.
I saw that. And Rita Moreno turned 90 a couple of days ago. That's another birthday.
Rita Moreno was in the movie version of West Side Story, and she is one of the very few performers who has won an Oscar, a Tony, and an Emmy. She was one of the great performers, and still absolutely sharp as a knife. And she is in the new version.
Oh, really?
Well,
that's
role, but yes, she was in the original movie, and she is in this one.
Well, I got to see it now that you mentioned this to me because I'm a big fan of Rita Moreno. She's a great actress.
Yes.
Great actress. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time and all the information you always give us. Have a wonderful week and enjoy New York. You've got 2 weeks left for the mayor.
I'll try. Either that or I'll boycott until the new guy takes over.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Bill. Thank you for your time and have a great day as always.
Same to you, Silvio.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Virgin Agenda, we're almost getting to the end of the year, if you can believe that. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.